Welcome to Upstream, a source of ideas and encouragement for courageous bishops, pastors, priests, seminarians, and the people who work with them in an increasingly hostile world, swimming upstream to bring Jesus to that world. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host. I'm so excited to be joined by a wonderful and courageous priest, Father Michael Andrade, an old friend of mine who's now out in Clovis, California at Our Lady of Perpetual Help Church. How are you doing, Father Michael?
I'm doing great, Pat. It's great to be with you, and you've been such an inspiration to me and help over the years, so it's great to join together again and talk about some important topics.
Yeah, this is such a blessing to be with you and to talk about something. So we're in the summer, right? We're leading up to July 1st. It's coming up in a number of weeks. And that's a time of great change in the Catholic world when a lot of pastors get reassigned to their parishes. And the summer months are a time of change as schools are going to open up in September or August. And this is a time where a lot of things are happening in the church. It's a very pliable time. And so we're going to talk about one of the biggest mistakes that I've seen pastors make. I know bishops struggle with this too, priests who become pastors, and people just in general and going through any kind of change. And they're often told, when you get there in the new assignment, don't do anything for a long time. Just walk around and get to know people and observe things. Give it a year before you make any changes. And I just, based on my own corporate experience, which I know is different than churches, but even in the church world, think this is not great advice. And you are a testament to how to manage transition. I remember years ago, you were a pastor in my hometown of Bakersfield, California at St. Philip's. And then they moved you to Clovis in the Fresno Diocese. You took over Our Lady Perpetual Help Church. And I'd like you to share with our audience how you went about doing that and what you learned.
Well, I had gone through seminary formation hearing the conventional wisdom of wait, don't change anything, don't do anything drastic. And of course, you don't want to walk in like a bull in a china shop.
Right.
But I immediately found that information so impossible to put into practice, because by the basic fact that I'm a different person than the person I'm replacing, everything I do is different. Everything I do is a change for people, especially if you replace someone who's been 6 years, 12 years, 20 years in a place. That's what I discovered, that my predecessor had been at my parish for almost 20 years. And so there was really nothing that I did that wasn't a marked difference from him, just from the way I walked into the sacristy in the morning. And so I had to realize that I think that advice comes from a good place of wanting to get to know people, wanting them to know they're loved and those things, which is indispensable. At the same time, when you walk in on the first day and they say, do you want to use this or that thing? Anything you say is going to be a different way of doing things. And so I discovered the best way of moving forward was to try to listen to how things were done before, ask questions, but also make clear the way that I thought it was best to do things and try to begin taking the lay of the land and deciding this thing I think needs to change now and this thing needs to change later.
And, you know, and the hard thing is, and I think this is totally true in churches more than other organizations, which is ironic because people can get their feelings hurt worse in churches because we're trying so hard to be nice. Somebody said, you know, clarity is kindness. And of course, you're not going to come in and go, well, that last pastor, we're not going to do things. And you're not going to badmouth him. I mean, we have a new pope, Pope Leo. So he's not coming in to say, the last pope, I don't like the way he did things, but he's already doing new things because he's a new pope. And that's actually just fine. We think we have to choose between honoring the previous one by staying with everything they did or insulting them by making a change. And it's not an insult to change things. And yet so many times in the church, in a parish, a pastor will do that, and all he's doing is prolonging the transition, which actually does cause more suffering.
Exactly right. And many of the transitions we have to go through in parishes, they're no easier if you wait 1 year or 5 years to do them. It's going to be difficult. Transition management and transitions are difficult in parish life, no matter when you do them. And so it's important to begin thinking about doing those things when they come about and not have this artificial barrier that one is waiting for, because it really, in reality, doesn't make things easier.
Yeah. I have a question. Let's get down to brass tacks. How long, literally, how long would you wait before, and did you wait before you started talking about what might change? Is it literally a week?
It wasn't a week. It was about 24 hours. So what I did when I came to this parish is gather the staff together. I started, maybe preface it with this. I started with the parish staff and the people who were closest to me, because it's really the first place that the pastor is coming into contact with.
Yes.
And it's the team you need to get around you and get on board, because, you know, you don't know the parishioners yet, but you have these 5-10 people that are working with you every day. That's the place where I focus my attention first.
Right. Yeah, to go out and make an announcement to the parish and have your leadership team hearing about it for the first time is a great way to guarantee that you're going to have people opposed to what you're doing.
Yes, exactly. I gathered the staff together and just began praying with them. I said, we're going to really focus on getting to each other and praying together. So let's share some prayer intentions. Here's my vocation story. I want to really focus on prayer. And that alone was a major... not that my predecessor wasn't a prayerful man or wasn't praying with people, but that's something they hadn't done before. And so it was a very big change for them right away. And I did that within my first full day at the parish. That's something we did.
That's beautiful. And this sounds so simple and so obvious. And at the Amazing Parish, we always talked about it, but start with prayer. Whether you're having a difficult employee decision to make, whatever you're doing, take it to Jesus, take it to the Holy Spirit and say, God, help us through this. So that's the first thing you did. That changes everything.
It takes time to form that leadership team. And so my first task was to form a group of people around me that I knew could help me in discerning what are the changes I need to make, what is the culture of this parish like, and what do I need to know? And so it might have seemed to parishioners that stuff really wasn't changing because, you know, mass times didn't change right away, you know, music selection, parking lot flow, whatever, you know, big things that people might expect to change. But within the staff culture, I was trying to form a leadership team. So what I started doing is just meeting with each of the staff members and asking them, tell me how you fell in love with Jesus. Tell me about your journey of faith. Tell me about your history here. What's working, what's not working. And that right away, those are conversations that most people aren't used to having in a parish environment. And it begins to show right away, not only who should be on the helping you as leaders in the parish, but also you get to get a strong pulse pretty quickly of what the parish culture is so that you can begin to decide what changes are most important.
You know, lay people listening to this, when people say, yeah, we don't do that a lot in the parish. And that's one of the things as a layperson in doing a lot of work with parishes in the church, people are surprised that there just isn't that much intentional collective prayer in the offices of parishes or maybe dioceses even or apostolates. And so the fact that you were doing that, you were setting a tone right from the beginning and something that Jesus was actively a part of. So that's the beginning of change, right? That's the beginning of change. And I love what you said too. You weren't doing symbolic external things like I'm changing the mass schedule. I'm changing the music right away. Those are the external things that people think that's what I should do to send a message, right? And you're like, no, I'm going to focus on the inside fundamental things that will then lead to that. So how did that play out?
There were some growing pains, to be honest. Not everyone felt totally comfortable with praying together, and certain people had to grow into it, and certain people had to decide this really isn't really for me. I think that I was more comfortable with how things were before. So it wasn't the easiest process because it was a major shift in how the office operated, and it took time to figure out who really wanted to be part of it and who thought they, who discerned on their own, they might be more happy in another setting.
Did some people opt out?
Yeah, some people opted out for sure.
Now, everyone listening to this has been through something like that. And it's so painful in the church, much harder than a company. How did you, as a priest, personally handle the fact that some people opted out and that you couldn't control the narrative necessarily in those cases?
That was the biggest thing for me, that I couldn't control the narrative, because when certain parishioners are used to seeing so-and-so in the office or so-and-so run this ministry for however long, and then they decide to opt out, even if it was a very mutual decision, or it was their decision totally that I had nothing to do with, the narrative in the parish begins to begin, oh, you know, Father so-and-so came in and right away so-and-so left, or this happened. And so I think it comes down to really leaning into that concept that you talk about, Pat, of responsibility-based leadership, not rewards-based leadership. You have to know, I'm going to lead right away, and right away, there's going to be misunderstanding, and I can't control always the narrative of what people perceive, but I'm going to keep leading, because if I just want everyone to think, oh, the new pastor is the nicest guy ever and everything's just hunky-dory, well, that's not a reality that can ever exist if real leadership is taking place.
Yeah. And I mean, this sounds very obvious, but you have to suffer through that.
Yeah. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
It was, I remember, if I could be totally blunt, one night I had gone to get some food and I was sitting in the parking lot, and one of the staff members of my former parish texted me, "How are you doing?" And this is a person who had been on my leadership team in my former parish, who was very involved in my life there. I saw that text and I just sat in that parking lot that evening and I just started crying, because it was just so hard. You know, it was letting go for me of someone who really understood the direction I was trying to take things, understood me, my personality, in the midst of people already starting to say, well, did you hear this guy this or this guy that, before you've even really had a chance to get to know them. And so, yeah, it is very difficult for us as pastors. We want to love people. We want to be loved by people, but leadership is going to be suffering. It's going to be the cross. And that's the reality of taking leadership roles within the church, even.
You know, Father Michael Schmitz and I, the other Father Michael, the other world-famous Father Michael like you.
Just slightly more popular and well-known than me.
Well, in our last podcast on Upstream, we talked about the difficulty and the danger of wanting to be popular. Because we all want to be loved. And we all do want to come into a parish and have people be like, oh, we're so glad he's here. This is going great. But that's impossible. And when you go through a transition, there will always be some pain and suffering. And yet, gosh, it feels like your vocation, you're already doing so much for other people. The idea that you might actually be temporarily misunderstood or disliked can feel like, no, this is too much. So how long did that go on for? And how did you deal with that, other than being with Jesus? Are there any other things you did to help get through that?
Being with Jesus is the main thing. And it sounds a bit cliche, but it's not. You have to be so rooted in prayer and that relationship with him, because if you're not, it will be impossible to lead well, or even lead as weak as we are in any semblance of trying to do our best. But one of the things I had to do within the first 5 or 6 months that I was at the parish is bring some new people onto the parish staff and team that hadn't been there before, that I knew wanted to embrace the mission that I was embarking on, wanted to be good collaborators, and were going to help me form the culture that I wanted. And so I had to bring people in that were going to be that support that I needed, that any pastor is going to need if he's going to form a vision and lead a parish forward.
Right. Yeah. And that's one of the things. To go back to this, so certain people opted out with dignity and love, but that's painful. And you brought a few new people in. So it becomes a new team. How long was it before external things started to happen that people in the parish could see?
Well, like I said, I'm sure there were things they saw right away, just the style of celebrating Mass, or, you know, every priest, we celebrate Mass off the same Roman Missal, and hopefully we're following the same rubrics, but you hold your hand slightly differently, and someone comes up and goes, I love the way you do that, man. Father never, and I was like, I was just saying Mass. I wasn't trying to. So there were some changes like that that I was really out of my control. I mean, those things happen right away, but bigger exterior changes probably didn't take place for maybe at least a year later, because I was not trying to wait for this magical 1 year mark, but it was just forming a team takes a long time and a lot of effort. And so I was putting my attention there because I knew if I didn't have that first circle of influence around me to really know where we were going, I wasn't going to have success with anything in the parish.
Right.
So we did change like a Mass time to better accommodate the school, maybe about 6 months in, a daily Mass change, things like that, that were bigger changes for some people that didn't affect the broader parish. But there was a lot of internal work that lasted for a long time.
Father Michael, I have a question for you. This is from the perspective of a layperson, whether you're a bishop or a pastor. I think this is important to hear. It's like, so we're out here and we're getting a new bishop or a new pastor more likely. And the question is, we're very hopeful. You know, like we're like excited. It's not that we dislike the last one, but we're like, hey, there's a new pastor. And usually we know that new pastor it's been like 3 or 4 months. They told us the old one was retiring or moving on. And so we're really excited. And if we don't see anything, we often are like, oh man, what's going on? And I totally understand that you need to start internally. You need to start with prayer. You need to do all those things. I wonder though, is there any possibility for low-hanging fruit? Like, is there any possibility to come in? And I might actually give a bishop or a pastor the advice of saying, get together with your team and say, are there one or two things that would be simple, not overly controversial, but would really send a message to people that we are going to do some good things? And I'm interested in what you think of that. Like, is that okay to do fairly quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest thing that a layperson can do to help their pastor during a time of transition is just to tell him, we're excited that you're here. We know that it can be hard to make transitions, but we want to support you in those. So just come to us if there's anything you need. Can we meet? Can we give you some input? We want to help in whatever way we can. We'll have your back, Father, because it can feel intimidating when you don't know anyone at the parish. And you're afraid that whatever decision you make is going to make someone uncomfortable or someone unhappy with you.
Got it. So what you're saying is, on the way out of Mass, while you're standing out in front, it's best to come by and just say, hey, you need more confession times, and then go.
Yeah. I know one person in my parish was sending anonymous letters with, like, it was like getting messages from the Zodiac or something like that that I had to decode. Just to say, would you please change the confession time a little bit? And I was like, why can't you just come and meet me and talk with me about this if this is a change you want to make? Because I want to make that change too. So people, they'll often wait till they think it's a good time, but it may not be the time that the pastor is able and to receive the information that they're wanting to share with him. So the best thing I think to do is to go to the pastor and say, hey, when would be a good time for you to sit down and get to know each other and to let us share how we think we can support you and where we can encourage whatever vision you have for us here at the parish, Father, and maybe share some of our thoughts.
So I have a question now. Do you ever find one of those low-hanging fruit initial things that you can change to be without any opposition?
Absolutely not. I mean, nothing you do in the parish is going to be without opposition. It always baffles my mind the things that someone will get mad about, but it happens no matter what. When I first arrived at this parish, I got some really good advice from a very high-level doctor and surgeon from one of our local hospitals who had been a leader in his field. He came up to me one day, maybe it was kind of showing on my face that it was, you know, I was just having a bit of a tough go of it. And he said, listen, Padre, every decision you make, if there's 10 people involved, one person will be unhappy. So just make 10 decisions, and by the end, you'll have made everyone unhappy at some point. And he just kind of laughed. But I've never forgot that piece of advice because it's just so true. And it's like, okay, well, I don't have to have 100% consensus on any one thing at the parish to mean that I'm doing a good job as a pastor. and that I'm leading in a good direction.
You know, and this is something every bishop, every pastor, every priest, every leader of an apostolate, every ministry head can listen to. So often in churches, they wait until they think it's going to be 100%. What they don't realize is that 9 of the 10 people who think it's a good idea, they are even more frustrated that you're trying to protect yourself from the criticism of the one. And oftentimes, I think the criticism comes from people on the staff or on the inside. In other words, everybody in the parish is like, this would be great. And somebody who leads a ministry is like, but that would mean I'd have to adjust my schedule a little. And we go, okay, I want to please the ministry head rather than do what's really being called for.
That's absolutely true, Pat, because I had a situation when I inherited my parish where there were a lot of people of all ages that were very on board. But I know this is true for so many pastors. You hear a lot from people who start every sentence with, I've been here for this long. I've been here 40 years. I've done this. My parents built this or that, which is just really a veiled way of saying, I'm in charge here and I'm not going to follow you as a leader. And there, you don't have any space to do things. And it can feel intimidating to us as pastors. At the same time, I had people that were coming to me who lived in the parish boundaries, but had been going to other parishes for whatever reason before I arrived and came and said, hey, we think that you're going to lead this parish in a direction that our family is really thirsting for, which is, you know, preaching the truth, the sacraments, adoration, all these things. Not that that wasn't happening here before, but they were really excited about a new person coming in. And if I hadn't done anything for fear of making the I've been here 40 years person upset, then I was going to just tell all those families who were here just ready to go wherever we went, I was going to tell them, you don't really belong here, so keep on looking in other places. I have to tell you, Pat, that those people are now leading ministries. The Holy Spirit is moving them. They've founded new ministries that are growing. It's so amazing to see what God is doing. And if I had just said, well, wait it out for 3 years and then maybe I'll make a change that you want, they would have gone somewhere else because they were they want a leader.
Yeah. And you have to risk some disapproval in order to draw people. I mean, you know, you go back to Jesus. Jesus didn't say, oh, when he said, eat my body and drink my blood, they're like, this is hard. He didn't go, well, let me rephrase it. Like, well, this is what we're doing. And we have to know that good things will happen if we're willing to take that risk.
Absolutely. And so no matter what moment you as a pastor make a change and are doing transitions, it's going to be difficult, whether it's in the first 6 months or years in, there's going to be people that are upset and unhappy with what's going on. I have to say, I'm 3.5 years into my time as pastor of this parish. And even today, I received I would call it a love letter, but it didn't feel very loving from a parishioner from a ministry that we recently had to make some changes to that were the right thing to do. But this individual is having a very difficult time understanding or accepting or really dialoguing about the change of direction that we're needing to make. And it's hard to open that letter and have something in there saying you're a coward, you know, you this and that. I mean, very hostile things. And I know that I made the decision with the help of a team. I know we prayed about it and I know it was the right thing to do. And I still felt, oh, you know, that's not a nice thing to have someone say. At the same time, we have to be willing to make those decisions and know, this is for the greater good of my parish. And honestly, if I had waited maybe another 3 years and say, well, maybe if I wait a little bit longer, it wouldn't make any difference in this situation. It would have hindered my parish and it would have been self-serving to me just because I want this person to like me. And they're not going to like any decision I make because they have in their mind whatever narrative they have about me.
You know, I think this is the summary of so much of this is that when we delay because we want to avoid the discomfort or the potential for criticism, we actually prolong the suffering for ourselves, for the people that want good change to come about, and even for the people that are resisting, because they're not happy and the others aren't. And so we have to pray about it and enter into that danger and know that good things will happen. And it is so hard. And it goes back to what you said at the beginning, though, putting that team around you, whether you're a bishop and you need people in the chancery around you, or a pastor and you need your leadership team. If you feel like you're doing it all alone, it gets that much harder. Now, there are days when you have to be willing to suffer on your own. But too often, bishops, pastors, priests think, I'm not allowed to share this burden with anybody. And I think about Moses having them lift up his arms, you know. You deserve to have other people help you. And so if you can build that team around you, it's a lot easier to do hard things that are good and deal with the inevitable criticism that's going to come from that.
If I can share another story on that, Pat, just not long ago, there was a decision that we were making that a lot of people were 100% on board with, a lot of enthusiasm, but there's a loud minority that is not happy with the change. And one of these people wrote me an email, and I didn't really know how to respond to the email. I didn't know if I should reach out to that person and what to do. And at that moment, I had my parochial vicar, who's on my leadership team, who's been part of these decisions. I said, please help me to process this. And to have that person next to you to hear where you're coming from, you can be vulnerable to in a way you can't be with everyone.
Right.
To give me sound and trusted advice because he's in the thick of it with me, made a world of a difference for me to be able to move forward with that transition and with that change in a positive way than if I was all alone going, maybe I did the wrong thing. Maybe this isn't right. Maybe I should give up. Maybe I should stop.
Yeah. You know, it's okay to have somebody say, hey, we've got your back, Father.
And that's why I would encourage a bishop. What advice can I give to a bishop? But I would encourage anyone in leadership or a pastor taking over a parish, really, as part of that transition, work to form that team around you, because if you're going to make changes, which you are, and you don't have those people with you, your life is going to be so much more difficult. We're not meant to bear the cross alone. And people do want to help you. And it may not be the person who's next to you the day you walk into the parish, but I guarantee you they're there and they want to be a part of it. And they'll help you do the heavy lifts so you don't do it alone.
And the good people, the best people, will stay and help. So to summarize this, there's been so many good things here. It's like when you're going through a change, start with prayer. Start with prayer. Build a team around you. It's like those internal things are so important. If you can identify low-hanging fruit, really positive things, even though there's going to always be some criticism, go ahead and do that. Delay for the sake of delay often prolongs the suffering, but prudence and patience and prayer, hey, the three P's, are always good. But the point here is this: change is good, transition is necessary. Go forward knowing that there will be some suffering, and trust in God that he will bring about the good stuff. And Father, I appreciate you being vulnerable and talking about the things you've been through. This has been a class that every CEO I've ever worked with should hear. But the work you do as a pastor and the work that bishops do is far more important than any CEO I've worked with. And so I hope this can serve them as they prepare for a time of great transition and change in the church. So it's been so great spending time with you, Father Michael.
It's been great to be with you, Pat. And I hope that and pray for any pastors who are taking over a parish this summer, that they just know that the Lord is with them, that they lean into the gifts given to them by their ordination, by their office as pastor, and their own personal gifts, and know that they are made to lead and to not be afraid, even if they're going to make some mistakes along the way, to lead as Jesus wants them to lead. And they'll be happier for it, and their people will flourish because of it.
Amen. Amen. Father Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
God bless you, and God bless everybody else. We'll talk to you next time on Upstream.